everyone, and welcome back to the Research VR podcast. I am your host, Azad Balabanian, and with me today is Alba Donoyel, the co-founder and CEO of Sketchfab. Hi, Alba.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Great. Great to have you here. And today we're going to be talking about Sketchfab, which I think I consider to be like one of the more important and kind of like foundational backbones of the 3D world in general. And so we're going to kind of go into like what it is for people that don't know and talk about how it intersects into VR, AR, and kind of where you see the world of 3D going. Yeah. So I guess let's start with the beginning. Like, how did you find yourself in this realm of VR and AR and 3D in general?
Oh, that's a long story. I guess it started with the fact that I do sculpture as a hobby.
Okay.
Physical sculpture. I'm sorry, there's police cars in the street.
You'll hear some New York sirens, and you'll also probably hear some Berlin sirens soon enough. It'll be a nice little concerto.
So just sculpture as a hobby, mostly wood sculpture. And back in 2011, I got commissioned a large piece. And I found myself running out of time to actually do this in wood from start to finish. And so I started looking into any other way to produce a piece in a faster way. And that's how I started discovering about molding and by extension, like 3D printing. So it was 2011 in France. 3D printing, like consumer 3D printing, was really nascent, and I really got fascinated by that. And so I was talking to everybody I would meet about this. And at the same time, I was I always wanted to start my company. At the time, I was working in photography, helping start a photojournalism magazine back in France. But meeting a lot of people and brainstorming for a lot of ideas to eventually start my own thing. And I left my job in December 2011. And in January 2012, I crashed at a party through a former colleague. And I was talking about 3D printing to everybody. And someone told me, hey, you should talk to this guy back there. He knows a lot about 3D. Mm-hmm. And so this guy was Cedric, who is now my co-founder and CTO. He had never heard about 3D printing, but he had been a 3D programmer in the video game industry for the past 15 years. And it turned out that he was one of the very first guys on Earth to work on WebGL, which was initiated by Mozilla in 2011. He was hired by Mozilla to make the first demo ever of WebGL for the launch of Firefox 4. And so we briefly talked about that, and we decided to have lunch together a few days after. And that's kind of how it started.
Interesting. So you're coming at it from 3D printing. He obviously had a 3D background. What was the original idea that you wanted to kind of iterate on?
So it was really more like Cedric's idea, I guess. So when I met him, he had already spent a year building an MVP of a web-based 3D viewer. So it was really the first web-based 3D viewer on the market.
You couldn't really look at 3D content back then? I mean,
Not without a plugin. Like, so all the 3D software editors like Dassault and Autodesk have tried to build 3D viewers as long as I've built 3D software, but sure, it's always been plugin-based. And so you could use Flash, you could use an installed 3D viewer. You could use like Silverlight or something, which was like Microsoft thing. None of them was pure web-based. So none of them was really scalable, and none of them could reach a ton of people through the internet.
Sorry, because plugins take like effort to download and don't work in every browser?
Yeah, exactly. Just like, you know, before YouTube, there was a Windows Media Video Player. Every other time it didn't work, you need to install the updates, and people don't install plugins, just like people don't download apps. And so it was a huge limitation factor. And then WebGL came to market with the potential to be the first purely web-based solution, so no plugin required. The challenge being that it was very early tech, so it was only running on alpha versions of the browsers, initially only like Firefox and Chrome. So it wasn't fully scalable yet, But Cédric, for his expertise around 3D and real-time graphics, knew that it had all the components to eventually become like a full standard. And so he started building this thing half just for the technical challenge, I think, and then half because he was working on a daily basis with 3D artists in the video game industry who were using screenshots or videos either to showcase their work, more like a portfolio use case, or to share their work with their customers or colleagues. And so he thought there has to be a better solution. And so he built this to be either a portfolio like showcase thing or just a link sharing thing.
Who were the first kind of first people that started to use the product?
So when I met him, he had this very like bare bone interface. He had a very obscure name, which was showwebgl.com with 2 W's. And I think he had maybe 6 users, which were essentially like the 6 3D artists he knew.
Sure.
And he had told pretty much nobody about it. He was not interested in anything that was non-tech. And so when I met him, I found it was really cool. I had no idea if it was new, if it was unique, if it had potential. I knew nothing about 3D, but I've always been interested in publishing solutions and publishing networks and the concept of broadcasting content. And so I just offered to help him out for anything that was non-tech. And so for him, it was a side project. And then for me, it started a side project. And so I brainstormed on a new name and came up with Sketchfab. And then we officially launched as Sketchfab at the end of March 2012. And it immediately took off. Like within a month, we had 1,000 users. The first batch of users mostly came from an article published on BlenderNation.com, which is this as the main forum for Blender people and Blender news. And it was really... We were the first ones to do that. And so a lot of people who saw the news just gave it a try. And there's such a wow moment when you upload your file and people couldn't believe it was actually working. It's like, wow, within like 20 seconds, I have my 3D file in the browser. It works and I can share it. And it opens like so many ideas and potential that it's kind of mind-blowing for people. And then from there, it just kept growing and growing.
So how would you compare the landscape of like 3D viewers today? I actually don't really know how else you would do it, right? If Sketchfab, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is like, if Sketchfab didn't exist today, like what would be the alternative if, discounting other companies that could have made a Sketchfab in that sense, but like what are the alternatives of Sketchfab today? But more importantly, like how, I know you, I always follow, the advancements in the renderer and like, there's always new things being added. How did it first start? What did it look like and kind of how does it look like now? I know I just threw a bunch of questions at you, but.
So the alternatives, you mean that would not be WebGL based or
I guess maybe also WebGL based. I don't know if they're.
So first we were the first to market. And then when WebGL came to market, I think most, so a number of people looked into it. I think one of the challenges that people were either good at the web or good at 3D. And back in 2012, there were very few people good at both. So Cédric was one of the few. And 3D is super fragmented and very complex. And there are more than 100 3D formats. If you look at video or sound or image or let's say 10 formats. And there is different software for each use case. And so most people who started looking at WebGL did it in a vertical way, looking at a specific use case. Like I'm going to build the viewer for architects or the viewer for engineers or the viewer just for artists or the viewer just for 3D printing. And so a lot of vertical viewers emerged. And as a result, they were more like solutions, like tools as opposed to communities or libraries of content. And so there were very few platforms. We thought there was a potential for a horizontal approach, not targeting any specific software or industry, with the caveat that the feature set would be less advanced for each vertical. Typically, like architects want collisions that you cannot go through walls, whereas 3D artists want animation support so that they can publish animated files. And so we figured we would answer the most common denominator, which is just showing the file, and without adding too much features around it, like measurements, things like that. Mm-hmm. And as a result, the solution would be much easier to use and would answer like 80% of the needs of 80% of people. Whereas other people, you know, get like sunglass.io, who started exactly the same type as us. But first they raised a shit ton of money. And so they hired like 30 people and then started. And they had an approach that was more targeting like engineers and more like a GitHub of 3D approach. Build a ton of feature before having any user. Mm-hmm. And then after a year, they were out of cash and they had 10% of our user base. And so they went down. And so anyway, very few platforms launched with an horizontal approach. And we grew much faster than any other. And so today we are pretty much the only independent platform still here from the early days. All the others either died or got acquired. And then there's been this new wave of platforms coming from the big guys. So that's like Poly by Google and Remix 3D by Microsoft. And then platforms which are more like VR or AR specific, you know, like Submarine by Amazon and so on.
Hmm. You'd think that with a huge company making an entrance that it would be easy to do it. But I guess only just recently, Facebook, like a year ago, announced 3D upload support that they just recently killed, right?
Yeah, and Remix 3D was launched 2 years ago and then was just killed as well. But I mean, there is no historical example ever of any of the big five guys ever able to create a creative community, a content community from the ground up. Like they've always, it's always been for acquisitions. Google built Google Videos before buying YouTube. Instagram started as an independent platform. Every new media way, like image, video, sound, 3D, they always try. But they just don't have it in their DNA to build a community. And so it's hard for them.
So, I mean, I guess I can imagine why the community element is a big, big part of success, right? It's that network effect of having people that are uploading and then people that are also viewing. But is there any technological and passion differences that you and your team have brought to the table that it's hard if it's not, let's say if Google, you know, it's putting up Poly and whatnot, but it's not that's not their main business. It's not their main revenue generator. So like they don't really spend as much time or have the right thought or, you know, the right kind of passion behind it. Is that something that you think about at all?
Technology goes hand in hand with the community and one wouldn't be possible without the other. I think there are three elements. There's a community that is active, that we take great care of, and we have human response to any user with an issue, and we're even really proactive. And, I mean, we really have this as part of our DNA. And then there's like the network of integrations, particularly the Google and Microsoft and Facebook are thinking for solutions like just for their ecosystems. So they just care about their own formats and integrating with their own tools. Whereas, like, one of our core added values is that being friendly with everyone, being plugged in everywhere. And then there is the actual tech, like the rendering tech. And here, I mean, we've got this great community. A lot of people are amazed by the quality of the content, and they don't understand why do we have better content than anyone else. And this is really both because we have the community that is attractive, and so other artists want to join it. And then we're able to render great content. And so in the first years, it was really, we didn't support animation. We didn't support physically based rendering. We didn't support multiple materials. We only supported a few formats. And so a lot of the high-end artists, they would not upload anything until we were able to make it look as good as it would look inside a 3ds Max that costs like $5,000. And so we really needed the tech to attract the high-end community. And then we needed the activity to keep it engaged. And so yeah, it really took a while to have the tech good enough for a lot of people to adopt it. And so yeah, it really goes hand in hand. And then a lot of, we keep doing things that are very they're probably too specific and overkill for 99% of our users, but then it can unlock a few things. You know, like we added the cure code support a few months back. This is very specific to car and automotive rendering, to have this nice kind of varnish finish on the car paint. Mm. And we felt it would please both like very high-end artists who often like to make cars, and then unlock discussion with actual like car brands. And so it was an interesting thing to add.
So the you kind of figured if we have the basic stuff of this renderer, then we'll have 80% of the users or 80% of the use cases. But now, I guess over the last few years, you've been focusing on these like small additions of, you know, very tiny use cases, but that unlock, I guess, a whole industry, right? Like with car, I guess, important and expensive users that could, right?
Yeah, well, we either try to figure out what it has evolved over the years, but early on, I mean, we were trying to focus on features that could unlock a specific community, like supporting .blend files to unlock the entire Blender community, or supporting, I don't know, like a V-Ray baking from 3ds Max to help with the 3ds Max community. And then over the years, I mean, it's really been one of our core defensibilities to support state-of-the-art 3D rendering on the web. And so we always tend to that. And we know if we keep working on that, everything else will follow. And now we're trying to either work on features that are highly requested by the community or that have a potential for monetization because we need to sustain the platform. And ideally, it has a bit of both. Another example is like our ground shadow. So to automatically add a shadow under a model. And it's great for both the community and then our B2B, like our enterprise users. It's great for product display, but it's also great for a character from a video game.
As soon as when that launched, I was like, ooh, that looks amazing. And I guess for some reason I realized how much that like ground bake shadows, that like almost like ambient occlusion shadow on the ground, just adds to even, it's not even an augmented reality view, right? It's just you're looking at it in a default like skybox or something, but it just adds to the presence of an object being there. And I actually went back to pretty much all my everything that I had uploaded and then added the ground shadow and then also saved a new thumbnail because you know, you want to have that in.
Yeah, they come to life with the shadow. Right. I love that feature.
So how do you describe Instagram to, I'm sure you have different ways of describing, I said Instagram. Wow. That was going to be my second question. How do you describe Sketchfab to people? And let's take like someone that's just not connected to 3D games or tech at all. It's just like any person that you were just meeting on the train or something.
So Sketchfab is a platform to publish and find 3D models online. Our core product is a web-based 3D player that you can embed anywhere, be it on your website, in a news article, in a social network. And then we're also the largest community of 3D creators with more than 2 million members and become the largest library of 3D files with more than 3 million 3D files. And so we're not only a solution for people who create content to publish it, share it, embed it, host it, display it, view it. We are also a place for people who need content to view it, download it, buy it, and then reuse it for other projects.
Okay, so that's a lot more built out than how I describe it when I'm telling it to people. But I guess I think of it as like a very useful Instagram, where it can be an Instagram on a very, very high level, surface level, if you just look at it once from any website. But obviously, you just said all the other useful kind of elements, having 3D. A huge content library to be able to pull from in apps. How, I guess that's also something I want to talk a lot about, is like the integrations into pretty much every 3D software at this point, whether it's to export your creations to SketchUp or to import models. Like what sort of engagement have you been seeing from that end? And like how, like what are the most interesting things that you've seen come about from those sort of integrations?
So on the export side, I think that's really been our initial like core distribution strategy. So it's been really powerful for us. I mean, a lot of people, especially in Europe, I think especially in France, like we make amazing software. And then we assume that it is so good that people will start using it and they will fall in love with it. And people are not wondering how our user going to hear about it. And so very early on, we figured that if we were integrated directly within the software used by the content creators, would have a double benefit of A, making their workflow much easier because it's one click, would like optimize the upload process for a given software and it's one click away to publish to Sketchfab. And then B, it would put our brand within the interface of tools they use every day, which was an amazing user acquisition strategy. Mm. And so if we want to reach Blender users, instead of us having to harass them and say, hey, Sketchfab is great, we're going to have Blender tell their users, hey, we've integrated Sketchfab and you should give it a try. And this is way more powerful. Mm. And so that was, we've stick to that. And over the years, we've had more than 100 integrations. 70% of them are native, which means the software have had a native Sketchfab button. So they've tweaked their code to add this. And it has served us really well. And I haven't checked the stats recently, but I think about 20, maybe 25% of our uploads come from those integrations, which is a big number. Then it's hard to say how many people discovered us that way and then still prefer manual upload for whatever reason. So Sketchfab is 7 years old. We've spent most of those 7 years focusing on the upload side of things and onboarding a lot of creators and content. And then we felt we reached critical mass when we kind of passed like the 2 million or 3 million model bar. And so we just, and at the same time, there was the AR and VR ecosystem like kind of starting to unfold with new ways to consume the content and new places to use it. And so we just started looking at step two, which is redistributing this content back into many other applications. And we figured, so it was a major evolution because for the first like 5 or 6 years, we really didn't want the content to leave Sketchfab. We wanted Sketchfab to be the end of the journey. Mm. And then we realized that if we let the content leave Sketchfab, it would make Sketchfab even more of a central place for everyone who creates to publish and then for anyone who needs content to find it. And so we released our download API like 18 months ago, but early 2018.
That's new.
Well, it's right, been, it's rather new, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
To let people add a Sketchfab search bar within their tools and making Sketchfab is not only a go-to solution to publish, but also to find. And so this is much more recent, so we don't have hundreds of integrations. We have maybe, well, there is a new one every week, and I don't keep track of all. But it's growing significantly faster. And of course, there are way more people who need content than people who make content. And so whereas until recently, our main metric was the number of uploads, now the number of downloads is growing way faster. And it's becoming a major metric as well.
Yeah, I guess you were making the bet. I mean, I can see why you want to be protective over things that are uploaded to Sketchfab, but you were making the bet that if we let go of these things or if people let it be downloadable, then it will come back, tenfold or 10 different remixes of one mesh.
And we have a number of ideas to monetize this in a way.
Right. And we haven't even talked about the store or anything yet, but actually going back to the import, so I'm sure now obviously it's now that you're in every like 3D software, you know, you don't have to go to anyone, they come to you. What was the first integration and was that, and like how hard was that to really make, to export from a 3D software? So this must have been like quite early on in Sketchfab's life.
So the first exporter, well, most of our first exporters were actually built by the community. So the very first one was for Blender. And it's just a Blender user who came up and say, hey, I love Blender, I love Sketchfab, I'm going to build a Blender add-on for Sketchfab. So that it was not native, it was a little script you would install in your Blender, which would add the menu. And so for the first 2 or 3 years, none of the exporters were native. Like we were nobody, we had no traction. A lot of the historical players quite frankly didn't understand what we were doing, like typically the Autodesk, and like, why would I want to share a 3D model on the web if it's just to view it? Like, there was no features around it. You couldn't download it. It was really a publishing use case, and they didn't understand. And so we started there with add-ons built by the community. And so we got like Blender and 3ds Max and C4D were among the first ones. And then as we grew in popularity, we started discussions around native integrations. And so among the first ones was Substance Painter by Algorithmic, 3D Code, which is another like texturing software. And then as we grew, we were able to get to bigger ones, like with native integrations. We got Photoshop quite early on, actually in 2014. We got Modo, which is among the big ones. Mm-hmm. And then there's also a lot of the 3D capture, like photogrammetry software, like Agisoft and Reality Capture and so on.
So how long have we been able to download models from SketchFab for free, right? They've been, you've had a toggle to let people download your model for free and with different licenses. So whether it's commercial or not.
So I think we added the download feature back in like 2015, always under Creative Commons. And the initial, I think it was mostly coming from a request from the cultural heritage sector, get like the British Museum. They wanted to release their content for 3D printing. And so we're like, okay, it's cultural heritage. It's cool. It's a cool use case. Let's do that. And so that's how it started. And then, as we grew, more and more people were asking, why don't you? A lot of visitors were asking, what is this SketchFab thing? I cannot buy the content, like this is silly. And then a lot of our users were interested in selling, and we figured out it was just a really low-hanging fruit to help our creators make money and then to unlock value from the library. I mean, we took a while to get there. One reason was that initially we didn't really want the content to leave SketchFab. Another reason was that we wanted to reach critical mass first. And also, it's a challenge to do both a community and a marketplace. And there are almost no examples. I actually only know two or three. So one of them was 500 pixel, and it was hard for them to be both a community of photographers. I think both like the showcase and community aspect, which is kind of just for the beauty of it, and then the marketplace aspect.
Why is that difficult?
Imagine because it's really hard to mix the purity of art, and you know, like art exists for the sake of art, and you don't want a dollar sign. I mean, if you're exhibiting and showcasing content, it's hard to mix the commercial aspect of selling content. There is this aspect that like people want to just show their art without having to think of a price. A lot of people are not allowed to sell their content, like people who work at League of Legends and they just want to showcase their work. And then it's not the same content. A lot of the artistic content doesn't make a lot of sense to buy. Like people who want to buy content or often want generic content, like a chair or a table or something they can reuse as a neutral thing.
Those are two different things. Some people, that are showcasing art versus people that are making, very generic things.
And so we're worried that adding the store would kind of annoy the community and we would lose some of the beauty of art for art.
Do you think that happened, or how did the community react?
Not really. I mean, because first we kind of separated it. So you can browse the store only if you just want to buy content, or it's just part of the regular community. And I mean, I think the community was happy to have this opportunity to monetize their work and I mean, it's still, I think the way we implemented it makes it kind of seamlessly blended with the community. And we haven't had any backlash, I would say, about this.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Not that I had seen any of, but I was just asking how it seemed. So I guess going back to you, SketchUp being one of the few community but also store websites, it's I guess akin to like if YouTube actually built built a way for their creators to like actually make money apart from just ads from it, which I guess you could have gone down route again. But now what we see a lot with the biggest YouTubers is they're just trying to sell shirts because that's the bigger profitable market. So
Vimeo actually did like us. So they just recently, after us, they had a marketplace, like a stock marketplace to buy videos. And so I think Vimeo is today the only other main example of both a community and a marketplace. Then you would have places like the Noon Projects, but it's not really a community. And then SoundCloud, they never really had a marketplace component. So Vimeo is the only other one. And then we did sort about monetizing access to the content, like pay to view. And so that would be closer to like YouTube Red thing, I guess. Mm. But I think it's too early for that. Could make sense. Today, everyone has AR glasses, and when there are more like mass consumption use cases of special content. But today, we would have, it was too early for that.
Do you feel like 3D is still in its kind of like early days? Is that, how do you view the world of 3D? And I mean, obviously we haven't even talked about VR and AR at all, but like, yeah, where do you see, is this peak 3D, which I don't think it is, but like, how would you describe like the industry?
I mean, it's been in a lot of places for a while, but always in the back scene, like in the back office of workflows, and you're like pretty much every product that is manufactured is designed in 3D first. A lot of movies use 3D, a lot of the games, a lot of the ads. When you see a big Coca-Cola ad in a 2D panel, it's always made with 3D assets, except that nobody knows that. I think 3D has been here for a while, but not consumed in 3D. So 3D used for a 2D output, which is either flat 2D or video or whatever. So what's new is 3D consumed in real-time 3D. And I mean, it's now, well, a lot through us being broadcasted in a lot of places. Like, I don't know if you saw the Time magazine using SketchUp to share 3D capture of the Amazon forest. And I mean, it's pretty much in the front page of Time magazine. And so I don't know if this qualifies as mass consumption of 3D, because it's kind of, for us, kind of B2B2C, where we provide the solution to Time, we provide it to millions of users. But it is mass consumption of 3D, just like New York Times uses 3D to document the Notre Dame events. And then on, we have more and more like e-commerce customers. It's being used every day. It's fun because we see in real time all usage through Google Analytics. And so whenever a model is viewed anywhere, we see where it's viewed, how. And so we see all those embeds were embedded in hundreds of thousands of websites. Whenever there is a news event, we have huge spikes because, I don't know, it can be the new iPhone, and the same day someone is going to publish a model of the new iPhone, and then the next day it's going to be embedded on the Wall Street Journal documenting, like telling the story of the new iPhone. And so, I mean, we're one of the vectors to bring mass consumption of 3D. But it's not really, I mean, we're not yet at a point where 3D is consumed for itself, and where normal people, which was kind of our early hopes, was that normal people would come to Sketchfab and would follow specific brands and browse Sketchfab just for the sake of it. And I think I'm not sure this will actually come, I guess. I mean, we're a browsing destination mostly for content creators, and then 3D is powerful often as part of a context. And so I think a lot of it will happen through either embeds. And today, 85% of our traffic is through our embeds or through our download integrations, where it will be the search bar. My vision is to be pre-installed in any AR headset, for example, and then you want to see anything. We power the search bar of Magic Leap or HoloLens, and you say, I want this T-Rex in my living room. Maybe it's a free T-Rex, maybe it's paid, maybe I have a subscription a la Spotify where I have unlimited digital content I can bring in my virtual living room. Mm. And then I will be able to cover virtual objects everywhere. It's going to take time.
Yeah, but that's fascinating that the goal isn't even the sketchfab.com itself or, you know, to be the destination, but the way you can kind of integrate yourself into the web, like the backbones of the web, and be the backbone for 3D, I guess, can be really interesting. Okay, quick question, hard-hitting question, and I hope there's a yes answer for this, but you wanted to start this company with 3D printing in mind. Are there any 3D printers that have... that you can search on Sketchfab on the printer itself and, or like just be able to directly print a Sketchfab model from the printer itself? I don't even know if they have things that can do that, but so <we've, laughs> that exists.
We've always had a lot of inbound from all the 3D printing companies wanting us to add a 3D print button on Sketchfab. Now we have the same thing with all the VR and AR sets and hologram displays. And so initially, at the very beginning, it was too early and we weren't really interested. We did experiment with that, I think, in 2014 or 15. So we did have a 3D. So it was a partnership with 3D Hubs, which back then was kind of Airbnb for 3D printers. And we shared the same investors. And we felt there was a learning fruit to just experiment. Mm-hmm. And then I think on the one hand, neither of us really put in the work to make the integration as robust as it could be. But then most importantly, most of our content is just not printable. It's too complex. So less than 5% is printable. If there is transparency, if the model is not watertight. And so we're really more of a visualization software. 3D printing is a manufacturing process.
Right,
and we've never had the bandwidth to give it more attention.
Yeah, there's a lot more logistics involved with printing than there is with 3D modeling and viewing in general. I guess I'm sure this has been something you've thought about or has been talked about in the company many times. But like, is there any effort or any need to push Sketchfab also into the content creation side, whether that's 3D modeling itself or like something more about more life or live capture kind of side? Is there?
You mean offering our creation tools?
Sure.
I mean, it's been a long quite an ongoing thing. Typically, like a lot of investors have been wanting us to, like, why don't you have a 3D capture app? And there are a number of things to consider. One is that one of our core strengths is to be integrated with all the creation software. And if we start, messing up with them and building our own solutions, we're going to compete with all those integrations. Mm. Another one is that very different skill sets. And so, I mean, people who make creation tools focus on that. People who make publishing and web-based sharing platforms focus on that. And I mean, if you look at YouTube, I think they only added a record button in the YouTube app less than 2 years ago. And so you couldn't even record a video from YouTube.
Nobody uses it. I mean, yeah. Why
would you use that? Yeah. And then I think 3D capture is still early. There are many different ways to do it. Whatever we would build would be like obsolete in 2 years. And it would really require a full team to work on that. There are very often different approaches depending on the subject matter. And so there are a lot of great people building great capture apps just for the head or just for rooms or just for objects. And we're not going to solve it ourselves. Unless, I mean, we raise like 100 million, we can try to do all the things. But I think it would be hard to think we have a strong positioning around like publishing and it works for us. We did very briefly experiment with sculpting. And so we have this app called SculptFab. It's really, it's because one of our former team members, Stefan, built a web-based sculpting app called SculptGL. And it was under MIT license. And so we just did a SketchFab version of it, but it was a hack, kind of hacking weekend project. Yeah, that's about it.
Fair enough. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you don't want to, I guess, cannibalize your own good position that you have with every other company. It's funny. Also, your pinned tweet says, it took 6 years, but proud to say we've been able to partner with Google, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, and Microsoft, like basically the big five. I can't imagine what other services kind of are integrated with everything. I mean, I guess there's a lot of backend stuff, I'm sure, but I can't think of a product or service like that. Okay, fair enough. What's the biggest growth vector that you see upcoming? And that could be short term or long term as well, but like where's the stuff for 3D that's still coming, and it's like maybe we're only seeing like the little bits of hints of it now, but you're excited about future?
There are really two sides of the equation. One is creation, one is consumption. Sure. So on the creation, it's everything around 3D capture. And so I expect the iPhone as a back-facing 3D camera. It will change a lot of things. It won't change everything because it will still not be great. And normal people would take a while to understand like use cases. And I mean, that's what about this tweet exchange, where I think people need to understand that 3D should do 3D capture for the sake of doing 3D capture.
Yeah, let's quickly talk about that. Actually, let me pull it up.
We also talked about 3D printing in the exchange, I guess. It was about the Samsung 10. I was surprised that it was the Samsung 10 3D capture feature was marketed for 3D printing, whereas for me it was 1% of the use cases.
Interesting. So they're trying to market as a 3D printer, but it's very hard to make things that are watertight isn't that hard, but like actually structural integrity are hard to build or hard to model. So you're saying it's not great for 3D printing?
No, that's not. I'm saying, and the Sony 3D capture app had the same thing. Like their app was able to output a file that was printable out of the box, so it was not hard to do that. My point was more that there is way more use cases around just the digital file. For like VR, AR visualization purposes or digital archive purposes. I mean, I expect very few people to want to use this for 3D printing. And so as I expect a lot of people to don't think they need 3D printing in their lives, I don't think it's the best way to market the future. Whereas explaining we live in a 3D world, you can capture it the way it actually is. And for me, it's just a natural evolution of capture. And we started with paintings, and we got photographs, and we got video. And we live in a 3D world. And so if we can capture it in 3D, we're going to do that. That's how it should be marketed. Like, you can capture what's around you in true native format, which is 3D.
Right. I'm having trouble finding this exchange. But basically, I can sum it up where I was like, I think I quote tweeted that note, some note trend tweet about the back facing thing. And I was like, yes, there's definitely going to be more phones coming out over the next like few years that will have a time of flight or some sort of 3D sensor in the back. And you know, maybe they're not all going to be well marketed because they don't understand 3D as well as 3D people do. But like, I was like, I still don't, you know, being a heavy 3D or a photogrammetry person myself, like I still have trouble figuring out how this is going to, if I could have like a magic wand and make the photogrammetry really easy, I'm like, I'm still trying to figure out who would use it for what. But I should also say this, I realized my own bias of like, even when I was just doing photography, I actually realized that I did very little portrait photography. I'm like, I loved grand landscapes. I loved astrophotography. And so I'm always been drawn to that. And my photogrammetry work also is like extremely skewed in that sense. And so that takes a lot of work and it's great. But like, You do very different photogrammetry, and I'm sure it reflects also the other your photography itself, whether it's food or people. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us more about like what you think about capturing or how to capture, and do you think about how you it's going to be presented at the end and how it's going to be viewed?
Yeah, I mean, typically myself, I mostly capture food, people, and objects, which are usually shoes or cars or motorbikes. And I think typically if you focus on food and people, I guess that's what most of Instagram's content is about, like people
right.
shooting their meals and their friends. So it's really the same behavior, like I have an amazing plate in front of me, or I want to record a moment with a friend or my son or whatever. And if I can do this in 3D, it's incredibly powerful because it's closer to what it actually looks like. That's kind of how I think about it. I don't really think about how it's going to be used or what I'm going to do with it. I'm just preserving a moment or an object, and
right.
I'm just happy to have a kind of a digital archive of it for whatever reason, for the sake of it.
Yeah, the art for the sake of art and not needing to be useful is I'm 100% there with you, and that's the beauty of it. It doesn't need to be useful by any means. But I guess I've been more worried about like with 3D. Obviously, like there's so many more there's more dimensions to deal with when it comes to like the experience of that thing itself. So I spend a lot of time thinking about how, you know, what does someone experience the first second they look at this, the next 5 seconds, the next 30 seconds. It's harder. It's not as easy as uploading an Instagram. I mean, is that where you think like a huge growth is going to be, is just real life capture and people capture?
I don't know. I see it's part of many, just like photo or video. I'm not sure I would say Instagram is a main use case for photo or for photo
sure,
existing.
Sure. It's one vector.
So, yeah.
Then in terms of like, do you think it's going to be polygons or it's going to be something more light fieldy that will be essentially like, is there a minimum viable product when it comes to like real life capture, like reality capture that you think we need to get to?
Like
or are we even there yet? I'm just thinking like, you know, if 3D is a big part of our future and we want to capture real life things like reality capture, what is the minimum, what do we need really for that? And is that going to be represented with like polygons? Is that really what's like kind of holding us back?
Well, I think we already have most of it today represented through polygons or point clouds and can be static or animated. It's just that it's still takes quite some time to have good quality content, and then this content is heavy, so it's hard to distribute it. So we're taking a small role in helping with that. I don't know, 10 years from now, something that takes a week to process in reality capture will take maybe 2 minutes, and then you'll be able to publish it anywhere independent of its size. And then you'll have many more ways to consume it through like VR, AR, and so on.
Hmm. What do you think about light field? Do you think that's something that's interesting and by any means, both on the capture, but also on the rendering side?
I haven't looked much into it. Since there are still a lot of technical challenges, we're busy enough with the photogrammetry challenges and stuff like that. So I haven't looked too much into it, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's a question I ask myself, like whether it is textured meshes that will be what is the format of what, let's say, the Instagram of 10 years looks like. It's hard. It's really hard to say. And I guess we just have to wait and see and keep experimenting. And bet on Sketchfab being there to to support it, right?
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, Albin, what's been exciting you lately about about this world of 3D, whether it's like a new VR headset or AR. Is that moving along the time scale that you saw it to be, or is it quicker, slower?
Well, first I would say that, to be honest, they have been mostly heads down. There are so many things happening, and I have less bandwidth now to like follow all the trends, and I'm still really following closely everything around 3D capture, but otherwise I'm mostly heads down, you know, like building growing the company and focused on what's happening at Sketchfab and don't have as much bandwidth as I would want to like keep track of everything that's happening. But I think the two important recent milestones were clearly Oculus Quest, and for me it's been the big I've used VR way more since I have a Quest than before. It's really a paradigm shift to have something untethered. And so it's been great. And then the other one, which is still Facebook, is unlocking Instagram AR, like going out of beta in August. There hasn't been a ton of noise around it. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, and so we're integrated in Spark AR, which is a Facebook AR platform, so that you can bring AR objects from Sketchfab into Instagram AR. And this has really increased our volume of downloads, for example. And I think this is, one use case, one example of mass consumption of special content, and also the work Snap is doing with Lens Studio. And this has been interesting to follow.
So these AR Studio apps have Sketchfab integration? Is that what you're
Just Spark AR for now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how do you see that really being used as a way to kind of put it around you and your face, or more of the other side of the camera?
Well, I think I don't spend a ton of time browsing Instagram AR filters. From the outside, it looks like most of it, probably 90% of it, is really face filters. Mm-hmm. And I think most of our, we have a lot of content that would be able to power things that are more like front looking but back looking, and we haven't really touched the potential for that yet. It's early. I find people to be really creative with what they could do with like SketchUp models or 3D models in general and face filters in general. The use case is still limited if it's mostly face filters, and then the way to consume it is still like mobile AR. When it will be like AR glasses and not just about your face, it will unlock many more use cases.
Cool. So Alba, how can people find you and reach you and find out more about Sketchfab?
So you can go to sketchfab.com. /about to hear more about Sketchfab itself. You can find me on Sketchfab, sketchfab.com/Alban, ALBAN, or on Twitter at ALBN. I'm quite active on LinkedIn as well. I guess those are the main places.
Cool. Before I let you go, you briefly mentioned this, but you didn't explain it. What is the Sketchfab name and why was it named that?
It was initially meant as a kind of a portmanteau of a sketch, which illustrated the concept of a drawing, potentially a 3D drawing, and then Fab, which was a mix of fabulous and fabrication, or like the 3D printing aspect, I guess. And it was available as a .com domain. I spent almost 10 days full time looking for a name. It just sounded cool, and we were happy with it, and both Cedric and I, so we went for it.
Nice. And it seems like it's been working out well.
Thanks.
Cool. And thank you all for joining and listening to the podcast today. You can find us on Twitter at ResearchVRcast. And we are also uploading these podcasts to YouTube now. We haven't started doing video podcasts. That will just add a lot more to the production kind of like timelines, but maybe over time. We do have plans of doing more. We used to do these podcasts in VR and record kind of like also our avatars, but then platforms changed, things happened, and setting up these conversations would have been much harder, but yeah. I'm sure that'll come around. Cool. Thank you, Alvin, for joining.
Great. Thank you, guys.
All right. And thank you all for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.